This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. President Donald Trump denied any wrongdoing in his July phone call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, even as congressional Democrats said Trump tried to pressure Zelensky into investigating former Vice President Joe Biden's son, Hunter. Speaking Wednesday afternoon, Trump said he supports the Ukrainian leader's effort to combat massive corruption and said impeachment investigations against him were a joke.
When they look at the information, it's a joke. Impeachment for that? When you have a wonderful meeting or you have a wonderful phone conversation?
Hunter Biden served on the board of a Ukrainian gas company at the same time his father was leading the Obama administration's diplomatic dealings with Kiev. Though the timing raised concerns among anti-corruption advocates, there's been no evidence of wrongdoing by either the former vice president or his son. Meanwhile, members of Congress were able to review a whistleblower complaint that triggered impeachment investigations against President Trump. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff, a California Democrat, said he found the complaint disturbing, especially the Justice Department's reluctance to send the report to Congress.
I think it's a travesty that this complaint was withheld as long as it was because it was an urgent matter. It is an urgent matter. And there was simply no basis to keep this from the committee.
The summary's disclosure comes one day after Democratic Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi announced a formal impeachment inquiry into Trump and allegations that he sought Ukraine's help to smear Democratic political opponent Joe Biden and help Trump with his 2020 re-election bid. For more on this and other stories, you can visit us online at voanews.com. We also have a mobile app. You can take us with you. From Washington, this is VOA News. An unrepentant Prime Minister Boris Johnson brushed off cries of resign and dared his foes to try to topple him Wednesday at a raucous session of Parliament a day after Britain's highest court ruled he acted illegally in suspending the body ahead of the Brexit deadline. Amid shouts, angry gestures, and repeated cries of order in the House of Commons, Johnson emphatically defended his intention to withdraw Britain from the European Union on October 31st, with or without a separation agreement with the EU.
This government that I lead has been trying truly to get us out. And most people, indeed most supporters of the party opposite, regardless of how they voted 3 years ago, think the referendum must be respected.
Opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn called for Johnson to resign and rejected Johnson's taunting demand for a no-confidence vote in the government, saying he won't support a new election unless a no-deal Brexit is ruled out. The United States' largest electronic cigarette maker has announced two big changes following a rash of recent deaths and illnesses. AP correspondent Mike Gracia has that story.
In the face of a recent outbreak of lung illnesses, including 10 reported deaths, Juul Labs Incorporated says it will no longer advertise its e-cigarette devices in the United States, and Chief Executive Kevin Burns is being replaced. Juul's new chief is Casey Crosthwaite, who was Chief Growth Officer for tobacco giant Altria. In a statement, Crosthwaite admitted to unacceptable levels of youth usage and eroding public confidence in the e-cigarette industry. Health officials are investigating hundreds of recent cases of lung illnesses, but so far, no major e-cigarette brand, including Juul, has been tied to the ailments. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Amazon wants to put Alexa in people's ears, on their fingers, or right in front of their eyes. AP correspondent Tim McGuire has that story.
One tech analyst says Amazon is pushing for people to have Alexa with them 24/7. The online shopping company out with wireless earbuds, getting its Alexa voice assistant outside the house and worn by customers all day long. The Echo Buds, which cost $130, let users order an Uber ride or find the nearest coffee shop as they stroll down the street. Later in the year, Whole Foods shoppers will be able to ask Alexa what aisle they can find any grocery item on the shelf. Amazon says it's also inviting some customers to buy $180 prescription glasses with Alexa built in. Plus, there's a limited number of rings that will include the online assistant. I'm Tim McGuire.
Israel's President Reuven Rivlin has asked Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to try to form a new government after last week's deadlocked elections that have paralyzed the country. Rivlin had the responsibility of selecting the candidate he believes has the best chance of forming a coalition government. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, September the 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's president invites industrial nations to invest in Africa.
We have the skills, the manpower, and the natural resources, but in many instances, we lack the capital. Hence my plea for industrial countries to take a long-term view of Africa.
President Muhammadu Buhari speaking Wednesday at the 74th UN General Assembly. Rwanda's president calls for closer cooperation between Africa and the international community. Former top Algerian officials get stiff prison sentences for corruption. And the United Nations says Libya is moving toward a full-scale civil war.
Intentional targeting of civilians and civilian objects, as well as indiscriminate attacks, may amount to war crimes. Crimes of such gravity cannot pass unpunished.
Kit Gilmore is Deputy UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. Demand for more sanctions on South Sudan grows. Zimbabwe faces its worst food insecurity in memory. And a Ugandan woman turns plastic bags into backpacks. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has extended an invitation to industrial nations to invest in Africa. Mr. Buhari, speaking Wednesday at the ongoing 74th UN General Assembly, said Africa has the skills, the manpower, and the natural resources, but in many instances lacks the capital. He said eradicating poverty is one of the indispensable requirements for achieving the UN Sustainable Development Goals.
Current attempts to help develop Africa by industrial countries are uncoordinated and plainly incremental. We have the skills, the manpower, and the natural resources, but in many instances, we lack the capital. Hence my plea for industrial countries to take a long-term view of Africa. We request you to come and partner with us to develop the continent for the benefit of all. Africa charges you with the singular task of initiating the effort we are calling for. Poverty in all its manifestations remains one of the greatest challenges facing our world. Its eradication is an indispensable requirement for achieving sustainable development. In this regard, Nigeria has developed a national social investment program, a pro-poor scheme that targets the poorest and most vulnerable households in the country.
President Buhari also thanked the UN General Assembly for electing a Nigerian, Ambassador Tijani Muhammad Bandi, as president of the 74th session of the UN General Assembly.
This is indeed a great honor to our country. Nigerians are truly grateful and shall endeavor to live up to the expectations and the responsibilities thrust upon us. Ambassador Muhammad Bandi is an experienced and seasoned diplomat, and I am confident that he will prove to the international community his suitability for this most demanding assignment.
President Buhari highlighted the multilateralism of the United Nations and how it has benefited the world. The president called for an expansion of the UN Security Council to reflect what he called the diversity and dynamics of the 21st century. Rwandan President Paul Kagame has called for closer cooperation between Africa and the international community in the areas of peacekeeping and peace-building efforts. Rwanda this month offered to take in 500 of the 4,700 asylum seekers trapped in Libya because Europe no longer wanted African migrants. Mr. Kagame spoke about this Wednesday when he addressed the 74th UN General Assembly.
In the coming weeks, Rwanda is preparing to receive and protect a number of refugees and asylum seekers from detention camps in Libya. The support of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees and the African Union is greatly appreciated. We call on every member of the United Nations to uphold their legal obligations in a spirit of solidarity. This partnership is a clear sign that we can cooperate to address complex problems. Africa itself is also a source of solutions. There is no doubt that the challenge of global inequality can only be addressed by working together. Rwanda stands ready to do our part. That includes guaranteeing the rights and opportunities of women and girls. I therefore take this opportunity to invite you to Kigali in November for the Global Gender Summit.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame speaking Wednesday when he addressed the ongoing 74th UN General Assembly in New York. The United Nations says escalating violence and a deepening humanitarian crisis in Libya is pushing the country closer towards a return to the full-scale civil war that overthrew former dictator Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The United Nations warns progress toward achieving a more stable, effective, and humane government has been shattered. It says the military offensive of rebel leader General Khalifa Haftar on the Libyan capital Tripoli in April has brought the political process to a standstill. Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights Kate Gilmore says she fears the chaos, the unbearable suffering of the civilian population, and widespread human rights violations in the country will continue unabated. She says summary executions, abductions, and forced disappearances, torture, and gender-based violence are rampant. She notes thousands of women, men, and children languish in prolonged arbitrary detention. She says human rights defenders and activists are targeted. She says UN staff, humanitarian workers, and civilians are attacked, killed, and wounded.
Intentional targeting of civilians and civilian objects, as well as indiscriminate attacks, may amount to war crimes. Crimes of such gravity cannot pass unpunished. Those responsible must be identified and held accountable.
Gilmore expresses concern about the plight of thousands of migrants detained under appalling, abusive conditions in Libyan detention centers. She says many migrants also are exposed to the impacts of the conflict.
Today, of the 4,900 migrants detained in inhumane conditions in Libya, 3,500 are held in detention centres located in conflict zones, many of those being located in or next to militia compounds or ammunition stores. One in five of those so detained is a child.
Every year, tens of thousands of migrants, mainly from sub-Saharan Africa, make the hazardous journey across the Sahara Desert toward Libya. From there, thousands risk their lives on the dangerous Mediterranean Sea crossing to Europe in search of a better life. Gilmore notes migrants intercepted at sea by the Libyan Coast Guard are returned and put into detention. She is calling for the closure of all immigration detention centers in Libya. The Libyan charge d'affaires in Geneva, Tamim Bao, accepts many of the criticisms in the UN report, but notes the political division in this country cannot end without international support. He calls on the international community to help his government tackle the problems of weapons proliferation, organized crime, illegal immigration, and terrorism. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 26th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. A number of former top Algerian government officials, including two intelligence agency chiefs and former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika's brother, have been handed 15-year prison sentences by the country's top military tribunal for alleged corruption. As Edward Urania reports from Cairo, one of the sentenced men says the charges were politically motivated.
15 سجن نافذ للسعيد بوتفليقة ولتوفيق وطرطاق ولويزة حنون.
Sentences against four of the once most powerful men in Algeria were handed down in the middle of the night by a military tribunal in Blida after a trial which lasted just 2 days. Former intelligence chiefs Bashir Tartak and Mohamed Midian were given 15-year sentences alongside former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika's brother and right-hand man Saeed. Former Defense Minister Khaled Nazar received a 20-year sentence in absentia. The four men, along with well-known politician Louisa Hanoun, were accused of conspiring against the army by allegedly meeting with a foreign intelligence chief to determine who would succeed ailing former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. Deputy Defense Minister General Ahmed Gaid Saleh, said to be the most powerful man in the country, says the military will remain neutral and not try to influence the election. Saleh says he would like to assure the Algerian people that the military has no political aspirations and that its only wish is to serve the country and its people. Hilal Kashan, who teaches political science at the American University of Beirut, however, contends the Algerian military is deeply involved in politics and that the former top officials sentenced Wednesday are being used as scapegoats to appease the public's wrath.
The deep state is very much alive. Figures are expendable, and you sacrifice them so that the military institution that runs Algeria remains intact. For the past few months, there has been a simmering uprising in Algeria.
Former intelligence chief Midian, known as General Taufik, called the charges against him politically motivated. Popular protests against the country's ruling business and political elites continue to fill the streets of many towns and cities across the country each Friday. Many of the mostly young protesters have been demanding that the country's political system be completely revamped. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The international community must do more to tackle networks of global corruption that are fueling violence in South Sudan, according to campaigners. The call follows the publication of a report detailing how corporations have profited from South Sudan's civil war. The investigation by the Century Organization, co-founded by actor George Clooney, shows the links among armed groups involved in the civil war, global oil giants, and British and American citizens. Henry Richwell has more.
May 2013, in Upper Nile State, South Sudan. Celebrations are staged to mark the reopening of the Paluj oil field. Government ministers pose alongside Chinese workers and executives from Dar Petroleum as the oil pumps are switched on in the world's youngest nation. Just months later, a brutal civil war erupts, killing hundreds of thousands of people. At a news conference last week in London, the Century Group outlined how Dar Petroleum played a central role in the conflict. John Prendergast is the group's co-founder.
Dar Petroleum is owned by some of the biggest and most powerful companies in the world. China National Petroleum Corporation, Sinopec, and Petronas from Malaysia. And they are all complicit here. These multinational companies are not just passive beneficiaries of a horrific status quo. They have actively participated in the destruction of the country. They've supported deadly militias, they've seriously polluted the environment, and they've paid off government officials along the way.
China National Petroleum Corporation and Sinopec could not be reached for comment. Petronas has not yet responded to VOA inquiries. South Sudan was plunged into war in December 2013 when President Salva Kiir accused Vice President Riek Machar of plotting a coup. Century co-founder George Clooney says the conflict was fueled by global corruption.
They received money, oil, transportation, and weapons from a vast array of people and corporations all over the world who have profited from this crisis.
The Century's Deborah Laprevotte outlined how corruption drove the civil war.
a company owned by President Kiir's 20-year-old daughter and her foreign business partners, obtained a mining license in a territory in which the government's military, which are under the control of her father, President Kiir, later drove thousands of people from their homes.
Corruption is part of the system across the region, says analyst Rachel Ebreck of the University of London, author of the book South Sudan's Injustice System.
People were engaged in accumulating political budgets in order to reward their followers, and these political budgets were very often dependent on behind-the-scenes deals. So it's not to be seen simply as an individualized activity, but rather as part of a system.
The Century Report says two British citizens formed an oil company with a general who is accused of forcibly recruiting child soldiers, and details how Ara Dolarian, an American arms dealer, allegedly tried to sell $43 million worth of weapons to rebel South Sudanese general Paul Malong. Those exposing corruption can pay the ultimate price. Lawyer and activist Dong Samuel Luak was detained in Kenya in 2013 and murdered in South Sudan. He had worked with the Century investigation. Again, Rachel Ibrek.
We can see, you know, what the level of pressure is on those people who try to stand up against this system, but we can also see how important they have been in this kind of activity of trying to expose what's going on.
The Century is calling on the international community to impose sanctions on the networks of corrupt and criminal activities that have fueled the violence. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The World Food Programme says Zimbabwe is facing its worst food insecurity in recent memory, with more than 5 million people in need of assistance. The United States has donated about $42 million in aid, but the WFP says that is not enough. Zimbabwean officials say fixing the dilapidated irrigation system is the key to turning things around. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Eddie Rowe, the head of the World Food Programme in Zimbabwe, says about 5.5 million people will need food assistance until the next harvest begins in April. Rowe says for years the need for food assistance was confined to rural areas, but now some 2 million people in urban areas need help as well.
We are talking of urban poverty, where you have not just food insecurity, but urban high rates of urban unemployment. So when you look at it now, what we are trying to do is to come together for us to be able to intervene in an integrated manner, so it's not just addressing food insecurity, but addressing urban poverty.
The Rome-based UN agent said this year it started food assistance early in Zimbabwe because of the ailing economy, recurring droughts, and the impact of Cyclone Idai in March. As to sum up the food insecurity situation in Zimbabwe, Rowe said,
it's bad. Even though I've been in Zimbabwe for roughly just under 5 years, when you look at trend analysis and the situation right now, I think in the history of this country, you have more hungry people than ever before in Zimbabwe.
Brian Nichols is the U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe. He spoke this week after his government chipped in $41.9 million for food assistance.
The agricultural sector in Zimbabwe has the potential to revive this economy. However, it has been jeopardized by years of mismanagement of resources. We support Zimbabwe's renewed efforts to tackle corruption, which, along with political reforms, can increase growth and investment confidence.
The government says irrigation is the key to reviving the agricultural sector and ending the food shortages. Conrad Zawe is the Irrigation Development Director in Zimbabwe's Ministry of Agriculture.
We have got a very big potential of irrigation in Zimbabwe, which is currently underutilized. Zimbabwe has got a lot of dams and has got two big rivers, the Zambezi and the Limpopo, which can be utilized for irrigation.
The government, working with the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, is repairing irrigation schemes on the country's farms, most of which have been neglected over the past 20 years. The UN says irrigation can counteract the recurring droughts that have hurt Zimbabwe's farm output in recent years. Even with the irrigation schemes working, Zimbabwe will need several months to reap a new harvest and overcome the hunger so many of its people are experiencing. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
Faith Aweko of Uganda describes herself as a whisperpreneur. She has come up with an innovative way to transform discarded plastic bags into backpacks for everyday use. Halima Atumani reports from the town of Mpigi.
Faith Aweko has no problem picking up waste. She had to do it all the time as a child when rainwater and trash would flood her home, located in a slum in a low-lying part of Kampala. Now she works with women who are hired to collect and wash plastic bags in the Mpigi district of southern Uganda. The bags are then transformed into durable, sustainable, waterproof and beautiful bags. Aweko and her colleagues through the Reform Africa project wanted to do something with the plastic bags that litter streets across Uganda, fouling the environment.
They are collecting plastic bottles all around, but the polythene bags are really being left, yet they are the most dangerous into the environment. And you find them poorly disposed. Some people even burn them, others dump it in their gardens, which doesn't lead into good agricultural production.
In Uganda, the most popular imported polythene bag is a 30 microns polythene. Research has shown that it will take 1,000 years for each bag to decompose. Aweko's idea was to compress bags together using an iron, then stitch the material into backpacks.
We iron this, we have to compile 15 plastic bags of these ones to come up with a strong backpack. We have designs, our customers need design on it, we cannot iron it as plain as it is. So we have to get these Lato Milk Boveras, other plastic small bags to really add in the creativity so that it looks very strong.
Rachel Mema, a refugee from the Democratic Republic of Congo, is working with Reform Africa. When she lived in one of Uganda's refugee settlements, Mema says there was a lot of plastic trash, which bred mosquitoes, leading to disease outbreaks.
So this solution is something that is not just for urban people, but also those people out there who really need to have something like that and eco-friendly, because it's an action toward our health right now, who is suffering from plastic.
As world leaders set new agendas to fight climate change and save the environment, Mema, Aweko and others at Reform Africa believe they are doing their part and generating some income in the process. Halima Athumani for VOA News, Mpigi.
And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United Nations says escalating violence and a deepening humanitarian crisis in Libya is pushing the country closer towards a return to the full-scale civil war that overthrew former dictator Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has extended an invitation to industrial nations to invest in Africa. Mr. Buhari, speaking Wednesday at the ongoing 74th UN General Assembly, said Africa has the skills, the manpower, and natural resources, but in many instances lacks the capital. He said eradicating poverty is one of the indispensable requirements for achieving the UN Sustainable Development Goals. President Buhari also thanked the UN General Assembly for electing a Nigerian ambassador, Tijani Muhammad Bandi, as president of the 74th session of the UN General Assembly. And that is it for this Thursday, September 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.